Hi, everybody. I'm really grateful to the Lord that I'm here today. I became a Christian, finally, in 1989. And as all of you have had the same experience, you were groping for God most of your lives, and so was I. I guess originally I was just going to talk about my experiences with the witnesses, but the Lord impressed upon my heart this week that He wanted me to tell you a little bit about my childhood. I was born and raised in Brooklyn, New York, and my father was a printer, and I didn't see him too much. He worked quite a bit. And my mother was an alcoholic. And when she was 5 years old, she got polio. And she was paralyzed from the neck down. And she was in the hospital, and the nuns in the hospital told her that she was a very special person, that the Lord had chosen her to have this affliction because He knew that she was strong enough to take it. And as a result of that, she didn't like God too much, and she felt that God didn't like her too much. She was just a little thing, 4'11", and back then they really didn't know what to do too much about the polio. They were able to revive her body, except for her right leg. It was very weak. So what they did, they operated on the knee and the ankle and took out the tendons and cartilage, and it was stiff always for the rest of her life. So she walked dragging her leg. She was a very bitter woman, filled with anger and hatred over what God had done to her. And her bitterness spewed out of her mouth. As a child, all I remember is verbal abuse. I didn't understand why. I thought it was because I was a woman and I could walk and she couldn't. But it was clear to me that I needed to stay out of my mother's way. So I spent most of my time walking the streets in Brooklyn as a very little girl. And if I couldn't find friends, I would look for stray animals that nobody wanted. I would look for kittens and dogs. And I would sneak behind our porch, and I would find empty beer bottles and bring them to the store. And I would get liverwurst and milk for the kittens and the dogs. And I would give those little animals all the love that I wanted. And the Lord was with me. The Lord was there showing me how to love. I could have become bitter. I could have become as my mother was. But I didn't, because the Lord was with me. And He showed me. I went to Catholic school and was very afraid of the nuns. They looked very stern. They weren't friendly or warm. And they wouldn't call me Pam because it wasn't a saint's name. So they called me Therese, which I hated. And I figured, well, if these people aren't going to call me by my name, I'm not going to learn anything. And so I didn't. I paid no attention. I was in my own world. I guess one of the nuns once told my mother she thought I was retarded. But there was one thing that I learned from these nuns. I did listen when they spoke about Jesus and when they spoke about the Bible and told Bible stories. I found them very interesting. And when I was 7 and making my first Holy Communion, my father bought a huge Catholic Bible with lots of pictures. And I went looking through those pictures, and I came across the baby Moses floating in the water in a little basket. And I could relate to that little baby. So at 7 years old, I began to read the book of Exodus. And when the nuns brought us into church to observe the Mass so we could get used to what was going on, I saw the priest bowing down and kissing the feet of Mary. I raised my hand and I asked the nun, why is that priest bowing down and kissing Mary's feet? The Bible says that we shouldn't worship anything that's on earth or in the seas or in the heavens except the Lord. Why is he doing that? And she smiled at me and she just said, well, he's not really worshiping Mary. The statue is just helping him to worship God. And in my little mind, I thought, something's wrong with that. I don't think that's what God wants us to do. So I went home and I started to read the red words of Jesus. I hated reading, but I really wanted to know what Jesus had to say. And in there, I found the Church of Christ. I found love. I found a beautiful world. And I wondered where it was. I hadn't seen it in my church. I wondered if there was a church on earth that was like that church in the Bible. And then I thought, well, it must have died with Christ, because I don't think anybody could live like that, because frankly, if somebody smacked me in the face, I'd want to smack them back. I wouldn't want to turn the other cheek. I came across the golden rule, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And that became an extremely important verse in my life at that age. And the Lord was with me because I remembered all those things that I read. They were very important to me, because that was where I learned about how to do things in life. I wasn't learning it at home. Through the years, finally, when I was 13, my parents divorced, and my mother's drinking got much worse, to the point where she would pass out most of the time. And I had a little 8-month-old baby, or my mother did, was my brother. And he wasn't being taken care of because she was drinking all the time. So I used to worry about him a lot when I was at school. And I would come home, and I would take care of him. And through those years, on and off, I often thought about God. I didn't go to church anymore. But I thought many times, I would lay in my bed at night and talk to him and ask him, why? And where are you? And where is your church? And where is your love? And finally, we moved upstate, and things were a bit easier. They got a little bit better. And eventually I met my first husband, and we married, and I had 2 small children. And they were just the most precious joy in my life, my 2 little babies. My husband he had problems, and he was not able to really have a relationship with me or my children. So I was lonely. All my friends had moved away. My neighbors were much older than me. And all I had was my 2 little children. And I began to think about what life was going to be like for them and what this world was going to hold for them. I saw so much immorality, pollution. I wondered what the beaches and what the ocean was going to be like when they were grown. I wondered what kind of problems were going to crop up in their lives. And I really felt that they needed something to give them stability in their life, to give them a hope and a peace. And so I began to ask my husband if he would study the Bible with me, if we could join some Bible study. I'd see some in the papers or as we were passing at church, and I'd ask him, can we go to that? And he would always answer in the negative. We were, however, going to the Lutheran church fairly regularly, but it was empty. I had a great spiritual thirst that wasn't being filled. And finally, one day, the pastor of the Lutheran church said that there was a book he wanted us all to read. And when we got done with the book, we were going to discuss it. And I said, oh, goody. I couldn't wait to get the book and read it. And I began reading it, and they would make some kind of a statement and ask you to look a scripture up. And I'd look the scripture up and had no idea what it had to do with what they were talking about. I read the whole book and had no idea what the book was talking about. So I asked my husband if he understood. He said, oh, yes, I understood. So I said, good, explain it to me. But he couldn't explain it to me. Well, shortly after that, I got something in the mail from the Missionary Alliance Church. And it was an offer of a home Bible study, a booklet that they would send to you. You could read it. And then if you had any questions, you could write the minister. So I did that. And I was very anxious to get the book, and I got the book and read it, and again was disappointed because it wasn't anything I didn't already learn in Catholic school. So I had lots of questions, and I wrote the minister a letter and asked him all these questions. In the meantime, a witness lady came to the door. And I had turned them away before, but this time my husband answered. And he spoke with her for quite a long time. I was outside with the children. And finally I decided to go and see what they were talking about. And so I did. And what she was saying was very interesting. And so she offered a Bible study. And to my astonishment, my husband accepted. His study lasted 2 weeks. But my study continued. My very first study, I was so thrilled after the study. The very first study, the first chapter of the truth book, I believe it was the first where I learned that Satan was the ruler of the system of things. And I thought, wow, that's why we're in such a mess. That makes sense. This makes sense. Even though God is the ruler of all things, Satan is down here making trouble. So I was delighted. And I began to read the Bible. I began to read so much. Every single free moment I had, I read. I no longer watched television. I just read the Bible. When my husband was home, I would go to the library and get books out, such as Abington World Bible Commentary, the Fox's Book of Martyrs, The Life and Times of Jesus Christ, and I would just read. And the Lord was with me again. Because the Lord was really reaching my heart and giving me a heart of compassion for people. And I started to reach out and try to do things to help people. I became a sponsor for a Christian child in Korea. And when the lady that I studied with found that out, she was, oh no, you can't do that. No, that's not, if you really want to help people, you need to go out and speak to people about God's kingdom. And let God take care of all the rest. You don't have to worry about any of that. Besides, those Christian places, they get most of the money. Just a little bit of the money goes to the children. So I argued about that a little bit, but eventually after a few weeks, I started to let go of that, and we went on to other things. Then the minister from the Missionary Alliance Church knocked at my door, and he came in and discovered that in the meantime I had been studying with witnesses. And so he sat down at the table. He was very kind. He tried to be helpful, but I don't think he knew how to deal with Jehovah's Witnesses, what to say. Every time I asked him a question, instead of answering the question, he'd go off on a tangent on something else. And he did tried to point out the deity of Christ to me. And I did remember these things and discuss them with the witness lady that was studying with me. And, of course, she had a logical excuse for everything that he brought up, every scripture that he brought up. And I was getting a little frustrated with the minister because I wasn't really getting any place like I was with the witnesses. When I had a question, they would answer it. But when this man, he would just drift all over the Bible, and I never got any of my questions answered. Shortly after that, another minister came to my door. I did go to the Missionary Alliance Church a few times. I figured it was fair that I should give born-again Christians a chance. I really had never been involved, so I wanted to see what they had to say. We went to a Bible study once a week there. I was still studying with the witnesses. I didn't tell them I was studying also with the Missionary Alliance Church. But there was a special talk the minister told me about the second coming of Christ, and they were having a special speaker there. And I thought, well, this is something I'd like to know about because I know what the witnesses say, so let's see what the born-again Christians say. So I listened to this minister's talk, and he had a few comments that I wondered where he got them from. He talked about the rapture, and I had never heard of that before, and he didn't mention a scripture. So when service was over, I walked up to him and I asked him about it. I asked him if he would show me in the Bible about the rapture. And he looked at me and he says, oh, you must be that witness that everybody's talking about. And I thought, I'm not a witness yet, but And instead of answering my question, he again went into the deity of Christ and started going through some of the scriptures. And I was getting annoyed because I wanted my question answered. If you wanted to talk about these other things, fine. But I wanted my question answered, and he wasn't answering it. And then, when he got done with all of these scriptures that he showed me, he looked at me and he said, "How long have you been married?" And I told him. And he said, "Have you been faithful to your husband all those years?" And I said, "Yes." And I thought, what has this got to do with anything? So I was completely turned off and decided I wasn't going to go back again. And another minister came to the door, and somebody brought him from that church. He had left that church, gone to another church, and figured that this minister could help me. And the minister was very knowledgeable, and I was very intent in listening to what he had to say. And he was very good. He brought up some points. I was really starting to have doubts now. He brought up points that none of the other ministers had brought up. And he stuck to the subject. He didn't jump from one thing to another. And everything was fine as long as I kept my mouth shut. But I had questions. And I started to ask those questions. And as I started to ask the questions, he would become angry. The more questions I asked, the more angry he got. Finally, he said to me, "Pam, women are not logical. Men are logical. So you're going to just have to trust me." And I looked at him and I said, "Well, logic is only as good as the facts that you have. If you have all the facts, then your logic will be right. But if you're missing some facts, you're not going to have the true or the right logic." Then he really got mad. And he told me, "A woman should not teach a man." And I said, "I'm not teaching you. I'm just expressing an opinion. And God gave me a brain. I think I can express an opinion." And he just got more and more angry with me and finally told me I was wicked. So I told him, "Well, I didn't invite you here, but I said I've been respectful. And I said, I've been hospitable. And I said, I don't think I have to listen to this anymore." And it was then that I made up my mind that I was going to become a witness. So a few months later, I was baptized. And once I was baptized, as the witnesses would say, persecution began. My husband hated the witnesses. And he was a very intense person. He wanted me to speak, breathe, think, feel everything that he felt. And so he set down more rules than the Mosaic Law. I wasn't allowed to have any of the friends over. I wasn't allowed to buy any literature with his money. I wasn't allowed to keep any literature out. If I did, he would throw it away. I had to keep it in a closet. I wasn't allowed to teach my children. If I did, he would threaten me. He was very cold. He became very cold and very distant. And every time I went to a meeting, he would get even with me one way or the other. So it was a very tense life that I lived. And I would go to meetings and come home directly. I didn't associate. So I really didn't really get to know the brothers. And I really didn't get to know what was going on because I had to come home. And I went out on field service. I would sneak out during the week, but make sure I was home by 12 so I could give my husband lunch. And this is the way we lived. Christmas times were tense. However, the brothers said to me, "Well, if your husband wants to have Christmas, then you'll just have to be obedient to him and allow him to do that, but don't encourage him." And so I didn't, but I tried to make it as pleasant as possible. And secretly, I was glad. Secretly, it was very hard for me to give up Christmas. But it was a good excuse. So this is the way we lived for several years. And finally, I began to find evidences that he was cheating on me. And I wanted a divorce. Things were very unpleasant. And the elder said, "No, you can't divorce him. You don't know that he's cheating." I said, "I know he's cheating. I don't have physical proof. I haven't followed him. I haven't watched, but I know it." And they said, "Well, you can't get a divorce because you feel that your husband is cheating on you. And I said, well, I said, the Bible tells us that if a husband isn't agreeable to living with you in the truth, then you don't have to stay with him. And they said, oh, yes, you do have to stay with him. So I continued to stay with this man, and there were times that there was physical abuse. Not too many, but there were a few times where he couldn't control his temper. And finally, one day when he discovered that his children, who were now teenagers, were becoming witnesses in their thinking, he couldn't handle this anymore. His anger was so filled. The house was just filled with anger. He just couldn't contain himself anymore. And he told me that I wasn't going to be able to go to meetings anymore. That was it. So, as the good witness that I was, I got up Sunday morning, got dressed to go to meeting. And he physically prevented me. He pulled me back by the hair of my head and just would not allow me out the door. Every time there was a meeting and I got dressed, we went through the same thing. And finally I got wise. And I thought, well, there is the Kingdom Hall got so large, it had split. And there were different meetings at different times he didn't know about. So I just left the house in my jeans, no Bible, and I just would go to these other meetings. Of course, I got some strange looks. But this went on for months. And I would make an hour here and an hour there. The elders never knew where I was going to show up because I couldn't really make it weekly, the same time, the same place. He would have gotten suspicious. Eventually, I got a phone call from one of the elders, and he said, we haven't seen you in months. We have no idea what meetings you're getting. He said, you can't go on like this. He says, do you know that there is such a thing as an order of protection? Your husband has no right to keep you from going to meetings. So he told me how to get the order of protection, but never offered to come with me or give me any moral support. And I went and I got the order of protection. And I was scared to death to go home because there was going to be a policeman at his door and they were going to hand him a summons to appear. And I had no idea how he was going to react. And I was crying. I was shaking. I didn't want to go home, but I had to because my children were there. So I went home. And fortunately, he behaved very quietly. And he was very subdued. He was shocked. I then pursued. I was trying to get a separation. I wanted to leave him. And, of course, the elders tried to talk me out of it, but this time there was no talking me out of it. I was becoming physically ill. I had gotten ulcerative colitis from all the stress through the years, and I had had enough. And so I pursued a separation. The elders argued with me, but I told him that this is what I had to do, that if I wanted my health, I said, I don't think I can do Jehovah much good if I'm sick, mentally and physically, and I've had enough. So they left me alone, and before Don left one night, I was playing my guitar. I was just learning guitar, and I was practicing, and he was sleeping, and I was trying to be very quiet, practicing my chord changes. And suddenly he barged out of the room and grabbed me by the throat and pinned me against the couch and had his two hands around my neck. I couldn't breathe. I couldn't scream. I couldn't speak. I couldn't do anything except dig my nails into his hand. And that's what I did, and then I passed out. When I woke up, my children were across the room yelling at him. And so I went again and got another order of protection because I had let the first one lapse by instructions of my lawyer, hoping that he would cooperate. And so I had to go and get another one. And this time, the judge gave him 4 days to leave the house. And I was just so happy. Finally, I was free. Finally, I was free to serve the Lord and to be with my brothers and sisters. And that's what I did. I became very hospitable. I had witnesses over all the time because I was so grateful to be able to have them over to the house. And pioneered when I could. I was working, but I lost my job. And so I had to go on unemployment. And I figured, well, if I can find a part-time job and have a sister come and live with me and pay me some board, then I'll be able to pioneer. And so that's what my goal was, and I began to look for part-time jobs. But being on unemployment, they would send you on job interviews, and they sent me on an interview for a full-time job as a secretary in BOCES. Well, I didn't want the job, so I didn't dress very well, and I was very negative. He asked me, can you take shorthand? I was, oh no, I can't take shorthand. Well, maybe you can go back to school. Oh, no, I can't go back to school. And I have children. Then he asked me to type something up, and I purposely made mistakes in the typing. But without realizing it, I corrected one. And he saw the one that I corrected and none of the mistakes. And to my amazement, he hired me. Well, I was very disappointed. I didn't understand why Jehovah had done this. I had been praying for a part-time job so I could pioneer. And I felt like Jehovah was rejecting me somehow. And I didn't understand why until my first day at the job. I was surrounded by born-again Christians. And one of the born-again Christians was a secretary right in the office with me, and she was very enthusiastic. And so I thought, well, this is why Jehovah has me here. He wants me to convert these born-again Christians. And that's what I set about doing. But this one secretary, Joanne, who was a born-again Christian, was very formidable. And she wouldn't back down like some of the others would. And so we had many go-arounds in the office with the other secretaries watching. Ooh, let's see. 1 point for Pam, 1 point for Joanne. This went on for quite a while until one time we really almost got into an argument. And I really was very fond of Joanne, and I admired her. So I said to her, this can't go on, Joanne. I said, let's just be friends. Let's stop talking about these things. I said, I'm a strong witness. I've been a witness for years. You're not going to convert me. And I said, I can see I'm not going to convert you. So we might as well just forget it. So we talked occasionally about things, but we kept it light. But little did I know that Joanne was going back to her home group and talking about me, and they all started praying for me. And, of course, I didn't pray for Joanne. Witnesses didn't do things like that. Joanne was a goat. You didn't pray for a goat. So I didn't pray for Joanne. I had another experience. I had a hairdresser who was also a born-again Christian. And he became a born-again Christian when I became a witness. And so we would go at it. And the people that worked for him in his salon would, oh, yeah, go ahead, give it to him. Every time I made a point or left him so that he couldn't answer. And for a while I thought, yeah, Jehovah's pretty good, you know. But I began to notice that Peter, although he had problems like I did, had so much joy that I couldn't understand it. I couldn't understand how he could be so happy and have these problems that I knew he had. And I resented it. I resented it. How can he have that joy? Why don't I have that kind of joy? And little did I know that Peter and Joanne went to the same church. And Peter was praying too. And I began to dread going in for haircuts. And if I went in for a permanent, my head would spin because he just wouldn't shut up. And he was just so joyful that I didn't have the heart to ask him to shut up. Well, again, the Lord got me that job at BOCES. I know that now. I didn't know it then. Didn't understand what he was doing. But I know it now that he was there with me, leading me, prodding me, showing me the way. I worked at BOCES for about 5 years. I was single for 5 years, had no divorce, had no separation, couldn't get anything from my husband. I was single. I was getting lonely, and had some experiences. Some of the girls in the office tried to fix me up with someone at a road rally. Little did I realize that they stuck me in this car with this guy for this reason. I was scared to death. After it was all over with, I was looking for another ride, and he came up, "Oh, I'll take you home." And as soon as I got out of that car, I couldn't jump out of the car fast enough because I was so scared, because I was alone. And I was vulnerable. And of course, I knew I couldn't marry anybody but a witness. And I didn't want to get into trouble. I didn't want to displease Jehovah. There was another student teacher, he was a substitute teacher. He was a cowboy. He wore a cowboy hat. And every time he came in to substitute, he'd come over to me. And he kept asking me out. So every time I saw that cowboy hat, I'd run in the bathroom. But I was praying all along for a witness husband. The Lord would provide me with a husband that we could share the same beliefs, and that he would help me with my children. Both my children needed a father. And the Lord didn't answer that prayer. And eventually, my daughter, at 15 years of age, was disfellowshipped. She began to see some things before I did. And she was angry about them, disillusioned. And I guess at her young age, didn't really know how to express it or what to do. So she got herself disfellowshipped. And she ran away to her father. And I was crushed. I cried every night for my baby. And I continued to pray for her, and the elders told me, "You can't pray for a disfellowshipped person." And I said, "Nobody's going to tell me that I can't pray for a 15-year-old mixed-up kid. She's a lost sheep. She doesn't know what she's doing." Even the Bible says that the shepherd went out for that one and left the 99 just to find that one. I said, "I'm not going to stop praying for my daughter." But the next week, Thursday night, they had a talk about not praying for disfellowshipped ones. But I continued to pray for my daughter. In my heart, I felt that that was wrong. I couldn't argue with them. I couldn't find the scriptures to prove it. But I knew in my heart it was wrong. So it was just my son and I. And my son was a wonderful boy. He was growing up, out on service. He was going to the meetings with me. He was respectful. He was my rock. And then he started to get an interest in the firehouse. Now, the brothers weren't paying much attention to him. As a matter of fact, I forgot to mention that we had all kinds of farm brothers at our house when my daughter was with us. And we thought it was because of love. But when my daughter was disfellowshipped, the farm brothers disappeared. And my son resented it, because my son realized that they weren't looking for his friendship. They were using him to get to his sister. And I asked different elders, different young ones in the congregation, if they would spend some time with Darren. I said, "I'm not a man. I can't give him the things that a man can give, and he needs those things." And all they wanted to do was take him out on field service. And that was okay, but he needed more than that. And so Darren began to get a little resentful and hurt. He was very enthusiastic about the firehouse. I had been in an accident, and that's when he became interested, because they had to use the jaws of life to get my mother and I out of the car that we were in. And after that, every time the fire whistle went off, my son was out like a shot, chasing the fire engines, wanting to see what happened. So as soon as he was old enough, he joined the junior volunteers, and they started training him on rescuing, on first aid, on how to put out a fire. And to me, these were all good things. And then finally, one of the elders came to me and said, "Are you losing your mind? Why are you letting him do this? Don't you realize that all they do over there is drink beer and watch pornographic films? Is that what you want for your son?" So I checked with the chief and I checked with my son as to what was going on over there. And I learned that not only could they not watch films like that or have beer on the premises unless they were having a picnic, and then only those that were of age could drink it, but the chief made all the young volunteers that were juniors, every time they had a report card, they had to bring their report card in. And if they were failing anything or not doing well, they couldn't come to meetings anymore. And they couldn't take classes anymore. So my son, as a result, did very well in school. And he was getting the companionship of males that he needed. And I was very proud of him. He was doing very worthwhile things. Resuscitating an old woman who had had a heart attack. I remember there was a rollover, and a man's arm was stuck underneath the car. And my son was one of the first ones there. And my son was taking Spanish in school. And this man could only speak Spanish. And so he was able to quiet him and make him feel better as they were working, trying to release him. So I was very proud of my son. But he was beginning to be shunned at the meetings because of what he was doing. And I was torn. I wanted to please Jehovah. I didn't understand how this could possibly be displeasing Jehovah. And I didn't want to see my son hurt by these people. And then, of course, he expressed an interest to go to college, and, of course, witnesses couldn't do that. The last thing I mentioned was that I had worked 5 years at BOCES, and things were getting difficult for me monetarily, and I needed to find another job that I could make more money at. And I searched for a job for about 6 months with no success, and so I stopped. And a few weeks after that, I got a call from our community college. Now, this is very strange because I had put an application in for part-time work at the community college 5 years earlier when I had wanted to pioneer. And that application just sat there for 5 years, and there was no one on the civil service list, and so they had no one to fill this position. And somehow they found my application. And so I started working at the college in institutional research, and I was very bored. And I was doing very poorly at the Kingdom Hall. By this time, I was very confused, very upset. And there had been a Watchtower study on taking care of widows and orphans. And I sat through the Watchtower that Sunday, listening to it, and couldn't control myself. The words that were being spoken were words. There was no action to them. And I just started to cry, and I couldn't stop. So rather than make a fool of myself, I went in the back. And I felt all along that this was something that not only I, but there were other single women that were really struggling. And we were neglected. And our children were neglected. And yet, whenever that subject was brought up, oh yeah, that's true Christian love, taking care of widows and orphans. Eventually, an elder came back to me and talked to me a little bit and made arrangements for me to come back the next night and we would talk. And I thought, thank God, finally I'm going to get some help. And that night when I got there, there were three elders there. And I'm slow. It took me a while to figure out what was going on. But about half hour into the discussion, I discovered that this was a committee meeting and that if I didn't shut my mouth, I was going to be disfellowshipped. And I thought to myself, something is wrong, but I don't know where I would go or what I would do. So I shut my mouth. But I did go home that night and pray. And it was the last prayer that I ever said to Jehovah. I poured out my heart, and I told Jehovah my feelings, and I told him that I felt that he really didn't care for me either. He didn't care for my mother, he didn't care for me, because I had done everything that I could to please him. And he answered none of my prayers. And I thought, where are you? Why haven't you answered these prayers? And it's interesting because I mentioned that to one of the elders. And he didn't realize what he was saying at the time, but he said to me, sometimes no answer is an answer. 3 months later, I transferred out of institutional research and into the admissions office, where we had a new director of admissions. And you'll never guess what that director of admissions was. We were thrown together with a lot of overtime because he lost two secretaries. We were behind. The office was very disorganized. He was new as a director of admissions. And so we spent a lot of hours together on overtime working and trying to figure out how to make the office more efficient. And I felt comfortable because this was a business relationship. And one night, everything just came to a head for me, and I just couldn't hold it in. And after work, we were still kind of working, sitting at the desks, and I poured my heart out to him. I had no idea he was a born-again Christian. And he just listened for a very long time. He was very patient. And he just let me go on and on and on and pour my heart out. And then he began to talk. He didn't have the knowledge that I had, but he had the love of God. He had seen God's love. And he had moved from Catskill to Saugerties and was going to a new church. He had never been there before, and he invited me to go with him. And something made me say yes. I don't know what it was. And when I got there, I was scared to death. I thought, oh, great, I'm leaving the witnesses and getting involved with demons. I was so scared, and yet it was like somebody had put a boulder on top of me. I couldn't get up out of the seat. And they were all very nice people. When they found out that I was a witness, they told Tom about John Meehan's outreach to witnesses, and we went to his home group. And when I walked in the home group and I was introduced, all of a sudden these people started coming up to me. You're the Pam we've been praying for 6 years. So that was the beginning of my walk finally with the Lord. That's the beginning of how I finally found the Lord. And the director of admissions was very patient with me and finally became my husband. I forgot to mention that in my last prayer, for some reason, instead of asking the Lord for a witness husband, I asked for a Christian husband in the same religion as me. And the Lord answered my prayers. And I finally realized that the reason they weren't answered was because I was not in the right place. And if he had answered them, I would have stayed there and would never have known him. So he couldn't have answered those prayers. But he did answer them once I was in the right spot. And then I began my walk and realized that although I was groping for God all those years, he was right there all along. And that he was trying to show me the way, and sometimes I was a little thick, and it took me a while, but I finally got to find him. He finally revealed himself to me. And so for those of you that are just coming out of the watchtower, I understand perfectly how you feel, the fear, the confusion. But just trust in the Lord and just let the Lord lead you out. And the Lord will take those shackles and break them little by little. Each day will get better. Each day you'll find more faith. And each day you'll find more love until you know that you are a precious one of the Lord. Thank you.